hardware sale and mega sports sale featuring jackets, parkas, jerseys, hoodies, toques, and more just in time for those cooler temperatures. Students get a 10% discount on everything. Head out to the Quality Inn 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. on Thursday and Friday, and then on Saturday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. for great deals on outerwear and sports apparel.
Queen's Homecoming kicks off today, and Welcome Home alumni. With a weekend full of exciting activities and events, there's something for everyone. Check out the full schedule and plan your perfect homecoming experience. Visit the Homecoming website now for all the details. Let's make it a weekend to remember. queensu.ca/alumni/homecoming.
You're listening to Kingston's only campus community radio station, broadcasting 24/7, 365 on 101.9 FM and CFRC.ca. Tune in for the best local programming.
Welcome back to Melodies of Myth, where we explore short historical tales blended with Indian classical and Western music. I'm your host, Simar Kaur, and it's an honor to accompany you on this journey of discovering the rich interweaving of music and history. Together, we will explore the stories, traditions, and timeless melodies that have shaped our understanding of this art form. Today's story is called The Night Rock That Waited for the Rain. It follows a young musician learning that Indian classical music isn't just about precision or performance, it's about patience, timing, and listening. Through her connection with Rag Malhar, the Rag of the Rain, she discovers that sometimes art doesn't move the world, it simply moves in rhythm with it. This story isn't about the miracle of sound, but the quiet honesty of waiting for the right moment to play. Here is The Night Rag That Waited for the Rain. When Anaya first learned to play the sitar, she loved how every string carried a horizon inside it. Her teacher told her, "Music isn't a sound, it's a lesson." The rag she feared the most and loved the most was Malhar. Legend said it could summon rain and the sky would listen if you played it sincerely. And as a child, she imagined gods in the clouds bending to hear her notes. But when she grew older, she realized it wasn't about magic. It was about timing, about finding your note in the weather of the world. Now, years later, she sat in a rehearsal room, far from her hometown, preparing for a concert called Monsoon Night. The posters promised a journey through Indian classical music. She smiled at the title. The Arts Council loved drama, but the name stuck with her. Monsoon Night. The trouble was, there was no monsoon. The air outside was dry, the trees stood still, and for a concert that celebrated rain, it felt dishonest. So, Anaya made herself a rule. She wouldn't play Malhar unless it actually rained. That week, she practiced everything else. Yaman for sunrise, Bhimplasi for afternoon warmth, Desh for memory, but each time she reached Malhar, something inside her tightened, as if the air itself wasn't ready. One afternoon she called her grandfather, her dad, the one who taught her her first note. "Malhar," he said, "isn't about making rain fall. It's about learning when not to force it. You must place your notes where water would collect." "Where water would collect," she repeated. "What does that mean?" He laughed softly. "When it rains, the earth already knows where to hold it. You don't have to decide that. Just play where there's space." She didn't fully understand, but she carried his words like a thread. The evening of the concert arrived. The hall was small. Warm light, rows of folding chairs, the hum of conversations before quiet. She could smell jasmine and rainless air. When the organizer introduced her, she took her seat, crossed her legs, and tuned the strings. The first note hummed through the hall like a promise. She began not with Malhar, but with Bhimplasi, a rag that carries the mood of longing without sadness. Her fingers found each phrase carefully, building sound like soft architecture. The Tanpura drone steadied her breath. The audience grew still. The music filled the corners, and then, during a long, trembling note, she heard it. Faint at first, the sigh of wind against an open window. She thought she was imagining it, but then came a sound she hadn't dared hope for. A drop, and then another. A slow rhythm forming outside. It was rain. No one moved. The sound of water touched her music like an old friend joining in. Anaya felt something shift in her chest. Not pride, not triumph, just a quiet recognition. The time had come. Without announcing it, she slipped into Malhar. The transition was gentle, as if the two rogues had been speaking to each other all along. Her sitar voice grew round and full, the notes curving like water rolling down leaves. Each slide of her finger mirrored the rain's descent. Each pause held a breath of thunder that never came. She remembered Dada's words, "Place your notes where water would collect." So she left space between phrases, letting the silence hold shape. In that space, the music and the rain spoke back and forth, not in competition, but in companionship. The hall became a small world suspended between two rhythms, one made by her hands and the other by the sky. She thought of her first music class, tracing circles on the mat, listening to her teacher say that Malhar was a conversation. She smiled. He had been right all along. Her right hand plucked a soft pattern, repeating it with variations, ripples on a surface that refused to stay still. Her left hand bent a note until it trembled like lightning just beyond sight. The rain grew steadier. The audience leaned in, caught between reverence and disbelief. The sound outside wove perfectly into the thal, as if nature had found its own percussion. When she reached the final note, she didn't rush to end it. She let it fade slowly, patiently, until it disappeared into the sound of the rain itself. The hall stayed silent for a moment longer than usual. No one wanted to break what had been shared. Then applause rose, soft at first, then blooming like the rain outside, finding confidence. After the concert, a young listener approached her. "Did you make it rain?" he asked, half joking and half serious. Anaya smiled. "No, I just waited until the rain was ready to listen." She stepped outside her sitar case. The rain was still falling, not heavy, just steady. The street glistened. She titled her face upward and let it wash over her. In that moment, she understood what her grandfather had meant. Music wasn't about control. It was about alignment, about knowing when to play and when to wait. As she walked home, puddles mirrored the lamplight, each one a small rug of its own, reflecting what was above, holding what had fallen. She thought of her teacher, her grandfather, the first lesson she'd ever learned. Music doesn't make the world respond. It simply teaches you to listen to it better. And that night, beneath the sky humming with rain, Anaya realized Malhar had never been about asking for rain. It had always been about becoming quiet enough to hear when it came. And up next, we have Canadian musician Harry Manx, an artist who beautifully bridges the distance between East and West. His music blends the soul of the blues with the meditative tones of Indian classical tradition, often featuring the Mohan Veena, a hybrid slide guitar rooted in Hindustani music. This next piece, "Don't You Cry," carries that unique sound, heartfelt, reflective, and gently touched by the textures of the rag. It's a sound that carries both grounded and transcendent, like a conversation between continents. Enjoy.
all women in STEM. Are you interested in joining a group that advocates for lifting up women and other underrepresented groups in STEM? Well then, WISE is the place to be. Women in Science and Engineering at Queen's University is a group of passionate women creating welcoming and inclusive spaces for future engineers, scientists, and leaders. When you join WISE, you'll have the opportunity to learn from experienced pros in the field, grow your network, and be a source of inspiration for the young women in the Kingston community. Follow our Instagram at QueensWISE or visit our website www.queenswise.ca to learn more.
And with that, our journey today comes to an end. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next week, Fridays at 3 p.m. only on Melodies of Myth.
Time to set our dials back with the Rainbow Rewind.
This week, we celebrate two remarkable queer voices.
I feel like you look at Lincoln, the way he loved men and the way he loved his wife. I guess you would say if you had to apply queer or pan or bi, whatever you want to apply to him, he was open. So his heart was open to love others.
Dear Speed, I shall be very lonesome without you. Yours forever, Lincoln.
This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Top U.S. court considers conversion therapy bans, speaking up and coming out October anniversaries, and Lincoln's lover of men saga continues. Those stories and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Marcos Najera.
And I'm Rhett.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending October 11th, 2025. Conversion therapy is on trial in the United States Supreme Court, which could quash bans against the discredited practice in more than two dozen states. The American Medical Association, the American Academy of Pediatrics, the American Psychiatric Association, and literally every professional medical and mental health organization in the country condemns the claim that sexual orientation and gender identity can be changed through counseling and prayer. The United Nations has compared it to torture. However, the High Court heard oral arguments on October 7th in a case that defends conversion therapy on free speech grounds. The specific case involves a Christian licensed therapist backed by the notoriously anti-queer legal assault team, the Alliance Defending Freedom. Kaylee Childs counsels clients seeking what she calls religiously informed care that comports with traditional biblical understandings of sexuality and gender. Her lawyers argued that a 2019 Colorado law known as the Prohibit Conversion Therapy for a Minor Act violates her First Amendment rights. The law prohibits and prescribes disciplinary action for what it defines as efforts to change an individual's sexual orientation, including efforts to change behaviors or gender expressions, or to eliminate or reduce sexual or romantic attraction or feelings toward individuals of the same sex. In addition to Colorado, similar bans now stand in more than two dozen other states, Puerto Rico and the District of Columbia. To most observers, the majority of the justices seem to favor Childs' claims that the conversion therapy ban restricts her religious and free speech rights. Far-right Justice Samuel Alito flatly called the ban blatant viewpoint discrimination. Justice Clarence Thomas doubled down, suggesting that the ban might be a prior restraint on speech. Colorado Solicitor General Shannon Stevenson defended her state's law. She argued that it protects minors from harmful and discredited practices, that it regulates professional conduct, not speech. Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson agreed, seeing the law as consistent with a state's traditional authority to oversee medical practices. Several scholars cited by Child's Alliance Defending Freedom lawyers have complained that their research on conversion therapy was deliberately misrepresented as supporting the practice. Linda Robinson's 20-year-old son Ryan killed himself after enduring years of conversion therapy. Her story is part of an amicus brief filed by parents of several young conversion therapy victims. Her heartbreaking words on MSNBC have gone viral.
This is not a left or right issue. This is an issue of parents loving their kids and wanting to keep them safe. It was always sold as a way to make a child whole and holy, and yet it did the opposite. It completely broke Ryan's confidence. And when we taught Ryan to hate his sexuality, we were teaching him to hate himself. These programs prey on vulnerable parents, and they promise things they must know they don't work.
The Supreme Court's decision in Childs versus Salazar is expected to be announced in late June 2026.
A volleyball league in Colombia's Antioquia region must reverse its ban on transgender competitors by the order of the Constitutional Court. Emiliana Castrillon Jaramilla is identified by the Edge Media Network as the trans athlete who sued the league. She had participated in matches for more than a decade before the Liga Antioqueña de Voleibol jumped on the anti-trans bandwagon. Suddenly, she was banned midway through a tournament. Her longtime participation prior to the ban was cited by a three-judge panel of the High Court on October 1st. It decided that the action violated her human and constitutional rights to dignity and equality. Judges Natalia Angel Cabo and Jose Fernando Reyes Cuartos declared that there is no scientific evidence to suggest that trans athletes have an inherent competitive advantage over cisgender athletes. The two judges noted that physical ability is more commonly linked to body composition, training, and nutrition. They also pointed out that no other players ever complained. Judge Cristina Pardo Schlesinger abstained. The panel's majority ordered the regulatory officials to allow Jaramillo to finish competing in the tournament. With help from the Ministry of Sport, they are to change the policy and revoke any measures excluding trans people from participating in their sporting events. Advocacy groups in Colombia and around the world praise the court's decision for bucking the trans sport ban trend. Those policies, primarily targeting trans girls and women, reinforce debasing stereotypes and are often based on pseudoscientific assumptions about biological advantage.
Florida's war on rainbow crosswalks continues even during October's LGBTQ History Month, with the bulldozing of an iconic installation on Ocean Drive in Miami Beach. The city failed to stop the demolition by Republican Governor Ron DeSantis and his Department of Transportation in court. The state claims that it's simply enforcing bans on public funds being used for political purposes. It offers no evidence for its assertion that the artwork confuses and distracts drivers. Those arguments are disputed by the only openly queer elected official in Miami Beach. Commissioner Alex Fernandez calls the erasure a total waste of taxpayer dollars to destroy a crosswalk that has proven to be among the safest on Ocean Drive. The DeSantis administration is paving over rainbow crosswalks in cities across the state. One of the first to go was at the intersection near the Pulse Nightclub Memorial in Orlando. Axios reports that the city of Miami Beach plans to fight back by installing rainbow benches across the city, but it's unclear when that might happen.
A decorated FBI trainee is fired for displaying a rainbow flag on his desktop. A victim of embattled U.S. Federal Bureau of Investigation Director Kash Patel, and the pettiness of the Trump administration. The popular sacked intern was also known to have displayed a pride flag at his workstation when he was a field office diversity program coordinator under the Biden administration. Sources say that such displays in the past would not have violated agency policies. The employee was undergoing new agent training at the FBI's Academy in Quantico, Virginia, when he received a letter from Patel ordering his immediate dismissal. It said he was being summarily terminated for poor judgment and an inappropriate display of political signage. Patel has been purging the agency of any staff members thought to be disloyal to Donald Trump. He recently fired more than a dozen FBI agents who took a knee while conducting crowd control in 2020 during a confrontation with a group of demonstrators in the nation's capital, an action that appeared to de-escalate the situation but drew sharp criticism from conservatives inside and outside the bureau. At least three senior FBI officials are suing the bureau on charges that their terminations were orchestrated by Trump sycophants.
Finally, Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney came to the Oval Office on October 7th for a discussion of trade issues, but ended up enduring an off-topic tirade by President Donald Trump instead.
We have no men in women's sports. Basic things. We're not going to take your child away and change the sex of your child. We're not going to do things like that. What they're doing to the country is so incredible. And they got away with it with all their woke crap, and now it's stopped.
Carney has four children. Sasha Carney is non-binary and spoke in 2019 about their relief at coming out while studying at Yale University in the U.S. More than 77% of Canada's exports go to the United States, so the Advocate speculated that Carney chose to ignore Trump's diatribe in furtherance of good trade relations. However, Canadian critics have condemned the PM for sitting silently by during Trump's anti-trans barrage. Meanwhile, critics south of the border continue to normalize the president's senescent ramblings.
What they're doing to the country is so incredible, and they got away with it.
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude, for the week ending October 11th, 2025. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon and Lucia Chappell, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm Rhett. Stay healthy.
And I'm Marcos Najera. Stay safe.
I'm Stephen Fry. The great Oscar Wilde once said, "The only sin is stupidity." That is why it is imperative that we stay as informed as possible. An excellent way to do this is to listen to This Way Out, the international radio program for all our sexually diverse communities.
Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
Listening to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine.
And now it's time to set our dials back with the Rainbow Rewind, your look at the moments, milestones, and memories that shape our queer journey.
From hard-won victories to cultural firsts, from the unknown to the iconic legends.
We celebrate the people and events that remind us how far we've come and how far we still shine. I'm Brian DeShazer.
And I'm Sherry Lunn. This week, we celebrate two remarkable queer voices. Transgender rights advocate, author, and television personality Jazz Jennings was born October 6, 2000. Jazz is well known for sharing her coming out and transition at a young age, breaking ground in media visibility for trans youth.
Born on October 8, 1958, Urvashi Vaid was an Indian-American LGBTQ rights activist, lawyer and writer, notable for her leadership at the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force, AIDS activism, and for her work on intersectional justice. Urvashi sadly passed away in 2022 after a battle with cancer, but her voice lives on here on This Way Out. Here's a clip of her from a May 21st, 1998 lecture, courtesy of the Pacifica Radio Archives.
articulating this broad vision, a political, cultural, economic vision that comes out of our experience of difference, that comes out of our perspectives as gay people, but that goes into, you know, linking us with other people. We need to take up the project of building a progressive movement, pro-gay, pro-lesbian, pro-bisexual, pro-transgender, pro-woman, pro-black, pro-environment, pro-labor, pro-people with AIDS, progressive.
Now let's rewind to some key queer moments. October 8th marks International Lesbian Day. Celebrated mostly in Australia and New Zealand, this day honors lesbian culture, history, and contributions.
And on October 11th, 1987, approximately 750,000 people marched in Washington, D.C. for LGBTQ rights. Major issues included legal protections, equality, AIDS funding, and visibility. It was one of the largest queer rights gatherings of its time and helped galvanize subsequent activism.
One year later, on October 11, 1988, activists Robert Eichberg and Jean O'Leary created National Coming Out Day to raise awareness and celebrate the LGBTQ community. They stressed that no one should come out until they felt safe and ready.
That's this week's Rainbow Rewind.
Because our stories aren't just in the past, they're the pride that powers our future.
I'm Brian DeShazer.
And I'm Sherry Lund. Stay tuned. More This Way Out just ahead.
Evolving, as our next guest tells us. This Way Out's Brian DeShazer continues his conversation with a filmmaker whose recent documentary is about how historians' understanding of Abraham Lincoln is an example of that evolution.
He is considered a sacred figure by both Republicans and Democrats. He led the nation through its greatest crisis.
He's on our currency. We build monuments to him.
He's the greatest president the United States has ever had.
Today, the big question that people are asking is, was Abraham Lincoln gay?
Last time on This Way Out, we spoke with filmmaker Sean Peterson about his documentary, Lover of Men, The Untold Story of Abraham Lincoln. Sean told the story of Lincoln's first two documented male lovers, Billy Green and Joshua Speed. This week, we pick up the story with the other two men in Lincoln's life.
Lincoln and Speed, you know, Speed moves away and Lincoln's a legislator for a while. He at one point runs for the Senate in Illinois and loses. He loses his taste for politics and just becomes a very successful lawyer for a very, you know, for a decade in Illinois. Then he ends up running for president. Back then, there was this, they fetishized really elaborate military parades and regalia. And there was this young kid from New York who would go from town to town in his elaborate military outfits with his crew. And it's basically going, you go to the fairgrounds and you watch these guys do all these military marches and they're almost like dances. And they're wearing these bright outfits. They're called Zouaves and they're based on these French military guys. And they have these crazy, I mean, kind of MC Hammer style pants, big puffy pants, bright colors. They're doing all these marches. It's very dancey. Lincoln becomes captivated by this guy that's in charge of these Zouaves from New York. His name is Elmer Ellsworth. Lincoln is like, okay, what can we do to keep this kid around? So he gets some of the guys that work for him for the campaign, offer him a job as a law clerk or working here in the office. And Elmer Ellsworth is like, I have no law training. You know, I have no intellect. I'm a military man. And you know, what's funny about Elmer is he's not really in the military, right? He's just playing military. He's more of a dancer. Lincoln's like, okay, well, whatever it takes. How about we just get you to do these parades as part of the campaign. So Ellsworth's like, oh, cool. So he starts working for the campaign so Lincoln can be around this beautiful kid. Now, keep in mind, Lincoln is now a grown adult man. You know, he's a middle-aged man, and Ellsworth is in his 20s. Lincoln wins the presidency. and immediately wants Elmer around. So he's like, I'm going to put you in the military. And so he makes Ellsworth a colonel. Lincoln signs a letter, two letters, in fact, to the War Department, insisting that Elmer Ellsworth becomes a colonel, and stations him at the White House. Ellsworth's around at Lincoln's command at any moment. You know, a lot of people believe he's living in the White House. The war hasn't started yet, right? It's very tense with the South. Lincoln is standing in the White House. He looks across the Potomac, you know, on the you know, Southern sympathizing side. And at a hotel across the Potomac, they have a Confederate flag waving above the hotel. And it always irks Lincoln. Well, Ellsworth makes note of this. So Ellsworth is tasked to go across the river and cut some of the telegraph lines to make it difficult for, you know, the South to communicate. And while he's over there, he takes it upon himself to go up into this hotel and take this flag down. And the proprietor of the hotel shoots Elmer Ellsworth dead. Now, this is the first casualty of the Civil War. He was a huge war hero. When he was shot, he was bleeding. They took the Confederate flag that they tore down. They wrapped it around him to soak the blood up. They cut up that flag, and there are little pieces of that Confederate flag at museums all across the country. Lincoln was beside himself. He couldn't stop sobbing. And there are multiple reports of Lincoln couldn't leave the White House if his name was mentioned. He'd just be sobbing. And as one of the scholars says, he sobbed more at Ellsworth's death than his own son's death a year later.
How did they answer the question of, like, why is this guy so inconsolable?
Well, when I talk to scholars about this, other, you know, more conservative scholars, they will say that Lincoln formed a father-son bond with this guy. Mm. Like, you know, his sons were much younger. This is the son that he could always imagine wanting to have. And that's how they justified it. You know, he was so affected by it that he went down to where Elmer Ellsworth's corpse was being held and slept on his coffin. Now, we're not trying to make the case that they had sex. I mean, this is a much older man. Elmer Ellsworth had a fiance. I don't think they went there, but I think he had a major, major crush, love, affection for this kid. What happened shortly after that, and this gets to the person number four, Dr. Balcerski in the film From Occidental makes the point, like, well, this kind of opened up Lincoln's heart again. In walks Captain David Derrickson. There's a little place just outside of Washington that's now called the Lincoln Cottage that people can go and tour. It's a national site that Lincoln would go to in the summers to get away from the hustle and bustle. And out there was a big military hospital, and they felt like Lincoln needed, you know, security, a bodyguard. So David Derrickson became his bodyguard. And what's interesting here is we have a ton of evidence that showed that Lincoln and Derrickson would sleep in the same bed together while Mrs. Lincoln was away. Derrickson's superior officer talked about it in his book. Lieutenant Colonel Thomas Chamberlain wrote a book about that brigade and all their duties, and talked explicitly a couple pages about how Lincoln just had this deep affection for this guy. Their intimacy was very deep. He would wear Lincoln's nightshirts. And that went on for months and months. The thing that's interesting is he would only do it when Mrs. Lincoln wasn't around. Did she know? Did she not want to know? It's hard to say. There's no evidence of it, but he clearly wasn't doing it in front of her. When you look at Chamberlain's book, he's passing zero judgment on it. He's not saying it was peculiar or strange. He was just stating the facts. No problem. No big deal. It's not, and everyone knew about it. In fact, Gustavus Fox, who was his assistant secretary of the Navy, his wife, Virginia Fox, wrote, and we have a letter of her. There's this one part in it where she says, "What stuff?" Like, it with an exclamation point, like, "What stuff?" And some people are like, "Well, you know, she's saying what stuff? Like, I can't believe Lincoln is sleeping with a man." But the way I interpret it is that I'm surprised that a man of Lincoln's stature, what stuff, is with this lowly captain. He's not even with a general. He's not even with a colonel. He's with this, like, little lowly captain. I think it's more of a hierarchical thing. And it's so funny when you approach these more conservative scholars, there's nothing they can say to that one.
How does the historic record change over time and become general knowledge?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I think what's important is that our hope is that this could spark the imagination of historians, because history is an evolving thing. People point to, well, that's revisionist history. That's revisionist history. Well, lots of things are revisionist history if you find new evidence and see it in a new light. You look at your queer heroes. There's lots of artists that are queer heroes. There's Harvey Milk. There's, you know, there's certainly Mayor Pete. And there's people that are in the contemporary space. But the idea that the greatest president of the United States was a queer person is so inspiring and so comforting. He was queer in a way that is so open. I feel like you look at Lincoln, the way he loved men and the way he loved his wife. I guess you would say if you had to apply queer or pan or bi, whatever you want to apply to him, he was open. So his heart was open to love others, you know, and he, ahead of his time, was deeply affected by slavery and was open to the trials and tribulations of the slaves at the time, to the point where he died in the act of freeing them. This is a man whose love guided his politics. That's what I hope people take away from the film, is seeing a side of Lincoln that they may not have seen before.
Wow. Well, Sean Peterson, it's been such a pleasure talking to you. Learned so much from the film, fascinated by the subject. So thank you so much for joining us here on This Way Out.
He is considered a sacred figure by both Republicans and Democrats.
He led the nation through its greatest crisis.
He's on our currency. We build monuments to him.
He's the greatest president the United States has ever had.
Today, the big question that people are asking is, was Abraham Lincoln gay?
In the 19th century, for many men, their closest relationships were other men, and same for women.
Men would live with another man when they're single, and often did, and shared beds.
Lincoln probably slept in the same bed with men more than he did with women.
One of the things that fascinates scholars is his bedding down with Joshua Speed for 4 years.
There is love between those two men.
When you put together all of the evidence, it's really startling.
Lincoln has a type, dashing, daring.
We have this notion that if you have an attraction like that, boom, that's your orientation.
Sexuality through the mid-19th century was far more fluid.
But for someone who wanted a political career, it was mandatory that you have a wife.
Dear Speed, I shall be very lonesome without you. Yours forever, Lincoln.
What you have in the 19th century was very strict marriage culture. Get married, and then everything is possible.
Captain David Derrickson became friends with Lincoln while they were living here at the cottage.
There is a soldier here devoted to the president, and when Mrs. L is not home, sleeps with him. What stuff?
He was seen wearing the president's nightshirt.
If you want a smoking gun, here it is.
But then you see all these shifts to the end of the 19th century.
Freud was devastating to sexuality, defining very rigid categories.
And they're saying if a man loves another man, it's unnatural.
Homosexuality is a mental illness.
It was not only wrong, it was punishable. If Lincoln were to look down today, he would see the United States at a particularly fragile moment.
History is so important because it allows us to understand who we were, who we might become.
Lincoln's legacy is the insistence on equality.
We have been in the house of power.
If you can accept a queer Lincoln, you can accept queer people overall.
He should inspire us to achieve a true democracy for everyone.
I'm Brian DeShazer for This Way Out.
Find the podcast of Brian's complete interview with Sean Peterson at thiswayout.org. Lover of Men, The Untold Story of Abraham Lincoln is now streaming on Apple TV and Amazon Prime. Thanks for discovering This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. News Wrap was reported this week by Marcos Nahara and Rhett and produced by Brian DeShazer, who also produced this week's Lincoln biopic feature and wrote and hosted The Rainbow Rewind with Sherry Lunn. Tom Petty performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks Harry Richardson of Socorro, New Mexico, Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley celebrating 50 years together, and all the listener donors who make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts, and on WIUP Indiana, Pennsylvania, 2CCC Gosford, New South Wales, KZZA Eureka, California, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned, y'all.
Queens Homecoming kicks off today, and Welcome Home alumni. With a weekend full of exciting activities and events, there's something for everyone. Check out the full schedule and plan your perfect homecoming experience. Visit the Homecoming website now for all the details. Let's make it a weekend to remember. queensu.ca/alumni/homecoming.
Come on out October 16th, 17th, and 18th for two mega sales under one roof. The Quality Inn Hotel at 33 Benson Street is hosting its Zara-branded outerwear sale and mega sports sale featuring jackets, parkas, jerseys, hoodies, toques, and more just in time for those cooler temperatures.